Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Thanks for listening. And I guess our ratings and listenership went up by several percent last week, which is a lot. So thank you all, and welcome to all you new listeners. We got a lot to cover, so I'm not going to dilly-dally here. I do want to tell you that likely I will be running over my 56 to 61 minutes, depending upon the AM station, allocated for this show. As usual, all you folks that are listening to me on AM can catch the tail end of the show if I do run over, and it's likely, given all the stuff we have to cover tonight, www.ontherightsideradio.com. You can listen to the podcast. You can also get us on YouTube and, of course, all the usual places, which tens of thousands of people do. Here's what we're going to be talking about, because, boy, has this been an action-packed week. And, you know, Donald Baby is swinging the wrecking ball. Just exactly kind of what I projected and exactly what I wanted to see. He is flat steamrolling it, and I love it. And I have to say, before I give you kind of the outline of the show this morning, I have to say that being a businessman myself, I can see, and listening to all these talking heads, the pundits, and all these guys, what these people are demonstrating is that they don't know how to negotiate. They don't know or recognize negotiations. They don't understand business at all. The depth of lack of knowledge by the American press of the real world is on full display in listening to the comments that are being made about his various actions and comments and statements, etc. It is on full display. It is unbelievable. It is so apparent to me when I listen to him, when he says something. For instance, in the, I don't know how many of you saw it, but it was worth seeing. It was very short. The press conference that he conducted with Theresa May, the Prime Minister of the UK, one of the reporters asked a question about Vladimir Putin, because, you know, the press is all over the Trump-Russia connection, and, you know, the neocons and the never-Trumpers have said, you know, he's in bed with Putin and he loves him and blah, blah, blah. Look, let me tell you, Donald Trump is way cagier than any of these people give him credit for. His answer to that question was, oh, do I have a phone call with him tomorrow? You know, I'm not sure about that. I'm sure somebody will let me know. That was first of all, the talking heads right away went, oh my God, he doesn't even know his schedule and this important call and it's not on his radar. He knows about the call, folks. That was said specifically for Vladimir Putin, who he knew was listening to that press conference 7,000 miles away at the Kremlin. And what the message he was giving to Vladimir Baby was, you're not that important. I mean, it was great. It was great. And nobody gets it right. It's scary. Forget the bias of the press. I mean, that's obvious. Forget the propensity to report untruths, either by direct misrepresentation or by omission. Forget the hypocrisy, which I'm going to talk a little bit about tonight. Forget all that stuff. Their lack of understanding of the real world. Being an arm, most of them, of the Democratic Party, I might add. And certainly a manifestation of the liberal left and far left. Their lack of knowledge of how the real world works, how business works, how it's just unbelievable. No wonder they can't write a story. No wonder they can't properly report. No wonder they are pathetic excuses as relayers of information. How can you relay information on a subject you don't understand, you've never seen, and you don't even recognize? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Anyway, what we're going to be talking about this morning is a whole bunch of stuff. Number one, I'm going to tell you what Obama, because I've been doing this for the last 6 weeks for you every week. I've told you in short form because it's just too lengthy. All the stuff he's done to undermine Trump to the detriment of the country, most of it, and to further his legacy and to try and create a false platform for the progressives going forward. All the stuff he did every single week from the election up to the time of the inauguration. And let me tell you, he didn't stop for the inauguration, folks. The last 24 hours he was in office, going right up to like 11:57 a.m., the inauguration was at noon, is unbelievable. We're going to talk about that. And a couple little of those dots that I'm going to give you will tie into some of the other things we're going to talk about tonight, because it's all related. The left is working, even though they're completely befuddled by Donald Trump and the rapidity that he's firing his bullets and dismantling their stuff. The left is serious about trying to undermine what he's doing. They are serious about trying to, in some way, shape, or form, salvage 40 years of their skullduggery on every single level of American life, American values, American social values, government workings, you name it. I mean, they will stop at nothing. And as his steamroller picks up speed, as the roller on the front of the steamroller gets wider and heavier, as it's been doing all week, with one executive order after another, they are becoming increasingly strident and desperate. As they see their dreams of social utopia and all us bitter clingers and deplorables under their thumbs start to go up in thin air. And I love it. I gotta love it. I'm going to tell you, we're going to go over a few subtleties in some of Trump's presentations that you probably didn't catch and that the press certainly didn't bring to your attention. I gave you one already, and that was his, you know, what the press determined was his incompetence was really brilliant forward negotiating with Vladimir Putin. The comment at the press go, oh, do I have a call with him tomorrow? Well, I'm not sure. I'm sure somebody will tell me. I mean, it was great. I rolled on the floor. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall in the Kremlin. Anyway, we're going to talk about a little bit about some of the subtleties you may have missed, and that's just one example. I want to talk about the brouhaha. Believe it or not, this is just 4 days ago, right? This is how fast things are moving. Over Sean Spicer's coming out and dressing down the press after the inauguration that Saturday, and what's really going on with that. I also want to spend some time on the Women's March, which I'm going to term for you, because I'm just using their terms now, and this is not meant as an insult to you ladies who are listening. I am using the terminology from your gender sisters. I know they're not your sisters in terms of how you think or what you believe, but nonetheless, they are of the same gender. And there was a couple million of them running around the United States and another million of the ditties running around Europe. But I want to talk about the March of the Angry Vaginas. I mean, it was what a spectacle. What a spectacle. I don't know how many votes they cemented and how many people they moved over to Trump's side for the 2018 and 2020 elections. But it was a lot of people because the spectacle of the angry vaginas marching, you know, in all these various locations, Denver, Seattle, and, of course, Washington, D.C., and the outrageous, I mean, like, so you had to replay it because you couldn't believe you heard it. The outrageous comments made by their spokespeople, like Madonna, I'm sure you've heard about that, you know, gonna burn down the White House, and some of the other gals, truly remarkable. And we're going to talk about that because it's kind of funny to talk about on the surface. I mean, the angry vaginas and their pink hats that went all the way around their heads, so just their faces are showing, and that was supposed to be a vagina on their, I mean, wow. Holy moly. Unbelievable. What's more important about that march, however, is what was really behind it. Because this was not spontaneous. This was planned, it was organized, and it was funded by none other than George Soros, who put $90 million into the deal, mostly funded to 56 of the 403 various left-wing communists, and I mean real communists, like that's their official name, that's how they're registered, communist outfits and women's outfits and environmental outfits and you who knows what else was marching out there with the angry vaginas, all funded by Soros and organized by Soros. These people were bussed in some cases from 600-700 miles away. This was not spontaneous at all. You need to understand what's happening behind the scenes here, because the globalists, the communists, and, as I'm going to demonstrate to you, the civilizational jihadists, the Sharia law people in the shadows here in the United States were behind this march. And what it's going to point out to you is, and you can put this in the search bar, Unholy Alliance. Type in Unholy Alliance. The Unholy Alliance of the Left and Radical Islam. I did it several shows on that. Oh, 18, 24 months ago, everybody laughed at me. I got all sorts of letters. You're crazy. You're blah, 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 blah. You know what? I'm not crazy. I was exactly right. And I'm going to give you the proof tonight using this march, who the backers were, and I'm going to tie it all in for you. I think you're going to find it fascinating. Nobody has put it all together that I've heard about in the press at all. There's been bits and pieces, but nobody has connected the dots. So I'm going to connect the dots for you. I want to talk a little bit about voter fraud. You know, Trump is playing that from about three angles. He has a specific purpose for it. And we're going to talk about that because, once again, there's a lot more going on under the scenes, bubbling kind of under the surface of that whole topic than meets the eye. And we're going to talk about, I'm going to start off with, in fact, something I didn't get to last week because I ran over by so much. I mean, there's so much new. There's so much to talk about that it's just, I needed to expand this show to 2 hours. Maybe I'll have you guys write letters to the stations. But anyway, I want to talk about two of Trump's cabinet picks who are right now hung up by Chuck Schumer, who doesn't get it, and the Senate Democrats. and I'm going to start off the show with that. I also want to tell you that next week, I'm going to remind you at the end of this show, I have a really cool show. I've been doing a lot of research on it. Obviously, I'm going to cover the events of this coming week, which I'm sure will be as much of a whirlwind, a blizzard of wrecking, of Trump wrecking ball. Go Trump. I'm sure it will be a blizzard just like the week that's just gone by, maybe even more so, because I think he's kind of getting his sea legs under him. I think you're going to see this coming faster and faster and harder and harder. Anyway, two of his cabinet picks are terrific. First of all, DeVos at education. I don't know how many of you got a chance to see maybe just a little bit of her confirmation hearings. This is one tough lady, boy. I like her a lot. First of all, I'm a huge advocate of school choice, and that's for everybody, particularly all the poor kids in the inner city who are not being taught anything on purpose, right? On purpose. It is in the interest of the teachers' unions, and it is the interest of the Democrats and the progressives to keep the inner city folks down in the dumps. And you know, one of the ways you keep families in disarray and down in the dumps is to make sure that the generations are not educated. There's like 40% in several inner cities, Chicago, I think New York's a little bit better, Los Angeles is even worse, etc. There's 40% of the kids in the inner city, they could white, black, Hispanic, doesn't matter. The inner city kids cannot read. They can't read in high school. They can't read, folks. Now, if you are bringing up a generation of voters that can't read, you can kind of have your way with them, can't you? You bet you can. And that, of course, benefits the teachers' unions and benefits the Democrats, because the Democrats are supported by the teachers' unions. And because the teachers' unions give money to the Democrats, and the Democrats stay in power, they make things cushy-cushy for the unions and the union bosses. Everybody's scratching everybody's back. It's like crony capitalism at its worst. Crony government at its worst. And they couldn't care less about the inner-city people or the inner-city kids. They couldn't care less, except for elections. Then they care. But the more dependent they make the inner city population, the more likely the inner city population is to pull that Democratic lever, because that's what's keeping them alive. Literally. That's what's keeping them in food, in money, in whatever. I mean, it's disgusting. DeVos is a huge advocate of choice, where basically, and I'll make this really simple, where basically a family, it doesn't matter whether you're in suburbia or whether you're in the inner city, but you get a voucher from the government. And let's say in your school district it costs $10,000, I'm using numbers and these are low, way low in fact. But for example purposes, let's say your school district spends $10,000 a year per pupil, per student, for all the stuff that goes into their education, or lack thereof, in the case of the inner city kids. You, instead of going to public school, your parents, if you're one of these kids, can find a different school to send you to in a different area. It can be a charter school. You've all heard those terms, which are kind of, some are private, some are kind of quasi-governmental, but nonetheless, they're not under the thumbs of the teachers' unions. It's all non-union teachers who care about what they're doing, who really want to create a literate generation, which is one of the reasons, by the way, the unions are so against charter schools. And you could spend that money as the parent of one of these pupils to send your kid to a much better school. And, of course, the better schools cost money. You have to pay a tuition. But you got the money from the government because the government didn't have to spend the money to send you to public school. It's really that simple. I mean, actually, it's more complicated than that. But if you understood what I just talked about, how that flows, how charter schools, school choice, which you've heard those words, and grants, how they work and how they're tabulated and how they're compiled and how the amounts are arrived at and what you can do with them, you'll have a pretty good idea. DeVos is a huge advocate of school choice, a huge advocate of the grant program, a huge advocate of parents being able to send their kids wherever they want to send them, and the government furnishing the money up to the amount that would have been spent had they attended public school. And some of the questions that were directed at her were just, I mean, they're embarrassing. That's how bad they were. Just embarrassing. Like, does she back electroshock therapy? What? If a kid can't read, do you, like, strap electrodes to him so that he reads? I mean, wow. And, you know, she kept her cool, and she kept her calm, and you could kind of, I mean, I got to tell you, her face was like poker. She must have been seething inside. She had to be pissed off. There's just no way any human being could sit there and listen to this progressive dribble. And I gave you one example. I mean, there's a dozen. Progressive dribble and not be really pissed off. And she just sat there, let them spout their crap. And many times, because she wouldn't give them the answer they wanted, they repeat the question, the same stupid question, like three times, using up all their questioning time, and then whining about that. And she'd just sit there and give them the exact same answer she started off with. For instance, this one little example I gave you of absolute insanity. Do you believe in electroshock therapy? And she said, no, I don't believe in it. That was her answer. And then they asked it a different way. She goes, I don't believe in it. And then they asked a different one. She goes, I've already answered that. I don't believe in it. I mean, I was very impressed with her. Very impressed. So I can't wait for her to take over the Department of Education and tear it apart. The other person who is really terrific, and he has not been talked about in the press hardly at all, but all you listeners of mine out there in rural lands, like myself, and I know probably half my audience or more is in rural, ranch, kind of remote locations, particularly in Nebraska, Oklahoma, Montana, New Mexico, Wyoming, and Idaho. The guy that has been nominated for the Department of Agriculture as the Secretary of the Department of Agriculture is absolutely terrific. And his name is Sonny Perdue. He was a Southern States governor. He grew up a farmer. When he left the governorship down there, it was Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, somewhere down there. I mean, it doesn't really matter. But he went back to his farm. He's been a farmer and a very successful one for quite some time. And he is terrific. He believes in free markets for farmers. He believes in tripling or quadrupling exports for United States farmers. He's a huge believer in conservation easements and other devices whereby farmers and ranchers can raise money but still own the land. I could do five shows just on that. If you want to know more about conservation easements, any of you, pick up my book, number one national best-selling book, 6 national awards, named Best Real Estate Book of the Year by USA Book Review and another outfit. It's called Land for Love and Money. That's Land for Love and Money. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can get it anywhere. You can also get it from the publisher, www.landforloveandmoney.com. And the entire last section of the book, section 5, is dedicated to conservation easements. And they're terrific instruments. And I've been involved in a number myself. They have to be done right, as with anything. I mean, you don't want to screw it up because you can hurt yourself. So you have to have competent help and competent advice when you're doing one. But Sonny Perdue is all about that stuff. He's all about innovative ways for farmers, ranchers, and rural people to maintain, preserve, make money off of, finance, and keep for themselves and their offspring, if the offspring wants it, land and ranches and farms. I mean, a brilliant pick by Trump. A brilliant pick by Trump. And I think he'll be fairly non-controversial. We'll see. One of the things he does not believe in, and I know some of you folks who listen to me up in Iowa and some of the other subsidy states, you know, for beets and wheat and milk and some other things. Once again, that could be the series of a whole bunch of shows. He's not a big believer in subsidies, but he is a believer in what's called market compensation. And maybe one of these days I'll devote a whole segment in a show to talk about that, because, number one, I think it would be very helpful to all you rural ranchers and farmers. And number two, I think that you folks who live in a more urban setting or suburbia will find it fascinating. It'll give you an insight into American agriculture that you don't have. But anyway, I wanted to talk about his nomination, because that was a great pick. That's as good a pick for domestic things as Mathis was for defense. I mean, Sonny Perdue, an outstanding pick for agriculture, and DeVos, an outstanding pick, in my opinion, for education. Of course, the Democrats are being dumb, and they're delaying everything. In the meantime, I mean, I'm just laughing. As I have said on the last three or four shows, if you haven't listened to them, go back and listen. The more the angry vaginas march, the more the Greenpeace people climb 200-foot cranes and hang stupid banners off them, the more Madonna says, let's burn down the White House, the more these progressive talking heads basically talk out of their butts because they don't know what they're talking about with things that even the average person, with any common sense and ability to listen, assimilate and understand words, and anybody who lives in the real world knows these people don't know what they're talking about, knows these people are either lying intentionally or are completely oblivious to reality. Every day that goes by, every day Nancy Pelosi opens up her absolutely disgusting trap. Every day Chuck Schumer delays and plays games. Every day that you hear about the three top contenders for the Democratic National Committee chairmanship, Keith Ellison, ultra-left-winger and Muslim supporter of CARE and the Muslim Brotherhood. This gal, I don't even know her name, I have a mental block against it, who's the Democratic chairwoman for the state of Idaho. And I don't know if you saw the clips on her. I think you can probably just dial it up. Democratic chairman, Idaho State Party, whatever. I mean, she'll come up, and I'm sure right at the top of the Google searches will be this incredible talk that she gave this past week, which was mind-boggling. It was mind-boggling. It was as mind-boggling as the angry vaginas. And it was all about, and she's white, by the way. It was all about how white people need to sit down and shut up. And her job is to tell white people to sit down and shut up. Because, you know, everything, I mean, you can kind of get the gist. You got to listen to it for yourself, because I can't do it justice. It is so outrageous. It is so from left outer space that you owe it to yourself for the 3 or 4 minutes of the clip to listen to this and scratch your head. And trust me, it's so friggin' unbelievable that you will think it's a joke. Except it's not. But the more these people carry on, the better it is for us. Now, those are the first two things I want to talk about. The next thing I want to talk about is Obama-wama. What Barry did in his last 24 hours, because, you know, he just is who he is, folks. That's all he is. And progressives are progressives. That's all they are. So, number one, you probably heard a little bit about this, but I'm talking about like 2 hours before Trump is inaugurated. And contrary to the express wishes of Congress, by the way, in writing in the form of a resolution, He signs all the papers to ship off $221 million to the Palestinians, including Hamas and the PLO and all sorts of people. And I think we're all kind of smart enough. I think we're all kind of smart enough to know that if you send $200 million over to the Mideast, very little of it is going to go into food and clothing. It's all going to go into, you know, ammunition, bombs, other kind of stuff. I mean, that's the Middle East. This is not the first time he's done this, by the way. He did it several years ago with another $200 million to the Palestinians. Between the two, it's almost half a billion dollars to the enemies of the State of Israel with no checks and balances, absolutely no restraints on the use of the money other than the word of the Palestinians that is going to be used for the health, safety, and welfare of their people. Right. Anyway, Trump has shut that down. We don't have a final word on it yet as to whether he was able to, so we say, cancel the wire. But that's something that Barry did 2 hours before. He was under the law. He had to notify Congress, and he did. He sent over a handwritten note to an empty congressional chamber. So he complied with the law, and he picked a time when, of course, the entire Congress is at the inauguration. So there was nobody there to receive his notice, and therefore nobody to blow the whistle and stop the transfer of funds. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm sure that was just a coincidence, of course. Okay, then we have, you know, I've talked often in my shows about the real intent of immigration, which is the fundamental transformation of the United States, just like Barry promised, and just like the progressives want. And that is the destruction and dilution of American values, American creeds, American religion, English language, you name it. All the basic foundations of America. And the way you do that is to dilute it. You know, it's kind of like if you have and I'm not a drinker, but if you have a fine drink, the perfect martini, for instance, and you want to make it imperfect, you just add a gallon of water. It's the same theory, except you're doing it with human beings and affecting human beings, most of them materially adversely. I've often said, too, that the refugee thing is just an adjunct to the immigration thing. In other words, immigration, turning your head away from illegal aliens, keeping your borders open, DACA, you know, amnesty, all that crap, the adjunct to it is this refugee thing. It's one of the reasons that Hillary and Barry and all the progressives want to bring refugees into the country. And I'm not saying there's not well-meaning liberals out there. I know there are. Remember my definition of liberal? That's somebody who really believes what they think. And it's all emotion from the heart. And they still love America. Progressives are something else. They are communists. They hate America. And unfortunately, they know all the buzzwords to tell their liberal friends. So the very small percentage of progressives managed to control the entire liberal wing of the country, shall we say. In any event, it's come to light that in Turkey, they are taking Syrian refugees, listen to this carefully now, and they are moving them to areas that are inhabited by minorities that Erdogan, the Muslim Islamist president of Turkey, whom got along famously with Barry, by the way, that Erdogan considers a threat, or B, as not representative of a country which he really wants to turn into an Islamist republic. And there's five or six different minority areas in Turkey. And he's taking the Syrian refugees, which of course are Muslim, and he is purposely directing the flow of refugees into those minority areas to do what, folks? To fundamentally transform those areas, to dilute those minority populations so that they no longer exist in the form they are today, so that they no longer resist turning Turkey into an Islamist state, and that they lose their whatever power they may have as minorities in the Turkish social system. And that, of course, is exactly what was planned for the refugees here. The third thing that Obama got caught doing here this last week before the inauguration, destroying documents. Apparently, and this comes from WikiLeaks, by the way, apparently Obama and his staff were busy destroying thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of White House documents, which, by the way, we paid for and which we own. They don't. See, they work for us. I mean, they forgot that the last 8 years, but nonetheless, under the Constitution, they work for us. And whatever they do while they're working for us is ours. It is not their work product. It is our work product. I would love to know what these documents are. Maybe it's the 33,000 emails that got lost from Hillary. Who knows? So that's number three. Number four. 15,000. I'm going to have some facts and figures for you here in just a moment. 15,000 Syrian immigrants, I'm using the word immigrants, Syrian refugees, most of them young men, by the way, between 17 and 28 years old, like 80% of them, magically found their way into the United States, we've come to find out, in the last 6 months, without vetting. I mean, without vetting. No vetting. The State Department says that was just an error, a clerical error, I think they called it. So 15,000 men, 99% of them Muslim, between the ages of 80% of 15,000, 12,000 men, between the ages of 17 and 28, have made their way into the United States from Syria without being vetted at all in the last 6 months. By the way, when Trump announced his executive order, which was going to temporarily cease immigration from like seven countries that are huge exporters of terror and violence, when he announced that this last Tuesday, this is just 4 days ago, the State Department, let in the 2 days between the time he announced he was going to do the order and the order was signed, over 1,000 Syrian refugees. In fact, more than any other two single days in months. 512 Muslim refugees, exactly the folks that Trump's executive order is targeted at for the safety, health, and welfare of the American people. 512 came in Wednesday, the day after, and on Thursday it was slightly more, like 530. They are all coming through what's called the VOLAGs. I have talked about this previously. You can put it into the search bar. They all, the Volags, which are V-O-L-A-G-S, are the Catholic Charities, the Committee for Refugees and Immigrants, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. You can type in any of those and you can listen to my show where I went into detail on them. And they're paid, so you know, folks, $1 billion a year, $1 billion a year by us, the taxpayers, via Obama's government, to take care of all this stuff, to bring in these refugees, resettle them, move them to places that they will not disclose, etc. $1 billion a year. Now, you know, it comes to mind that the people on the left talk about, oh, we're helping all these poor refugees, and it's women and children, which is a total lie. And, you know, we need to have a heart, and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. You know, if this was a charity, how come the United States taxpayers are paying for it? It would seem to me if this was really a charity, and these churches were doing all this stuff out of the goodness of their hearts and Christian spirit, they'd be funding it themselves, wouldn't they? What am I missing here? Anyway, Reuters, Fox Business, and VOX, they all reported Trump was going to sign an executive order on Thursday or Friday, which would put a temporary ban on refugees, would limit the ceilings on refugees, and would lower the numbers of refugees allowed when the ban was listed to below fiscal year 2016. However, the State Department, which kind of gets the refugees in and then feeds them to the Volags, the State Department's Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration, BPRM, that's the agency in the State Department that's responsible for accepting arriving refugees, transporting them to initial resettlement locations, getting them to the Volags, et cetera, et cetera. They picked up the pace when this came out. Now, you know, you have to really kind of shake your head at this. You have a president of the United States, you know what his policies are, and you act in a concerted manner intentionally to thwart them. Okay. Let me give you some stats on this. So, there was 575 refugees brought in on Thursday. That's 75 more than the 500 refugees originally reported, by the way, by the department. I mean, they couldn't even report it correctly, right? They had to lie about that. In the 2 days that elapsed from the time that the story broke to the time that he actually signed his order, the State Department brought in a total of 1,087 refugees, which, by the way, in a bigger picture, brings the total that have arrived in this country since October 1, 2016, which is the beginning of the fiscal year 2017 for the federal government, to 31,521 refugees, mostly 99.7%, 99.7% Muslim from active terrorist areas in the Middle East, and we have now learned half of those, a third of those, 12,000, were not vetted at all, and of that third, 80% were young men between the ages of 17 and 28. I mean, you'd almost think that you have a State Department and an outgoing president that would love to see a terror attack, wouldn't you? Or that maybe have sympathies toward Islamic extremism or something? In any event, I find that remarkable, startling, and treasonous. Now, the another thing he did, oh yes, there was Department of Justice consent decrees that were issued for Chicago and a number of other cities. Now, this actually went on for a year. The last one was done, however, it's my understanding, I don't have corroboration of this, on Thursday, the day before Trump was inaugurated. These consent decrees are between the Department of Justice and the police departments in these various towns. You know, there are some for New Orleans. There are some for Chicago. There are some for Baltimore. You've heard a little bit about it. These consent decrees basically hogtie the police in their dealings with most criminal elements in the inner cities in these metropolitan areas. This is important because it ties right back into kind of what I was talking about at the beginning with education, how progressives keep, you know, how Democrats kind of keep the plantation going, so to speak. And when you hand tie your police in these inner cities, you obviously don't decrease the crime rate. And you obviously make the population more dependent, which comes down to what? Votes, you bet. Okay. And then last, but not least, two more things. So on his last day, Thursday, he releases yet another, the guy has released thousands, never mind 36,000 hardened, felony, Mexican, illegal alien criminals he released out of jails over the past year. He releases another 330 drug offenders from federal prisons. A number of them, by the way, in prison, not only for drug charges, but on weapon charges, assault charges, you name it. Released 330 of them on the 19th, the day before the inauguration. And on the last day, while he was busy trying to send $221 million to his buddies in Palestine, Allahu Akbar, his buddies in Palestine, he was also busy that morning before Trump took the oath. And he put in a new gender-based immigration edict, literally the morning of Trump's inauguration. And what this edict is, to boil down into its simplest element, is that special consideration will be given to transsexuals, transgenders, and any refugee or immigrant who identifies, I'm making this really simple, who identifies with the opposite gender. You know, it's kind of like his bathroom policy for transgenders applied to immigration. So if you're coming into this country and you are barred by any other statute or whatever from coming in on an expedited move to the head of the line basis, if you are gay or you are a transgender, or you are a transsexual, or you are a man who decides that he's a woman that day, or you are a woman who decides she's a man that day, then you go to the head of the line and you are in. Because you're not only a poor refugee of the persecuted brown skin class, now you're of the persecuted subclass of gay, lesbian, transgender, transsexual, or I don't know what I am class. That was done the last morning too. I'm sure it's going to be reversed, but the fact that it was done tells you much. The fact that it was done on the morning of Trump's inauguration, just as the $221 million that he tried to get to the Palestinians was done the morning of Trump's inauguration, tells you much. Now, there's a couple of things, you know, I've talked about in my other shows, in a number of shows, in fact, how Obama has set up a shadow government. As an example of this, when Trump learned of the 1,087 refugees that were literally rushed through in the 2 days between the time the press reported on his upcoming executive order and the time he signed it, i.e. the temporary ban on folks from terror countries. Four people, really, the four top people still left at the State Department, got canned. Now, the mainstream press, because they're dishonest, originally reported it. You can Google this up. You can see the articles. Originally reported as a mass resignation, i.e., you know, State Department bureaucrats were upset about Trump and they were resigning rather than be part of the administration. That's not what happened at all. Trump canned them. They're done. One of the people canned, by the way, was Patrick Kennedy, the guy who was the Deputy Secretary of State under Clinton, who, along with several others and Clinton, refused the 600 requests from Benghazi for additional security, who, along with Clinton, gave the stand-down orders when those poor guys were on the roof of Benghazi for 13 hours fighting for their lives, and who was instrumental at the State Department in coordinating with Ben Rhodes at the National Security Agency in the White House to come up with the absolute bullcrap story about the video causing the Benghazi problems, which, of course, Susan Rice, you're going to hear her name again later in the show, by the way, which Susan Rice and Valerie Jarrett and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, etc., continue to foist on us, knowing it was a lie, and on the families of the people who had died in Benghazi when the bodies were returned to Andrews. I mean, too bad for you, Patrick. If it had been me, I would have prosecuted you for treason. In any event, that's what really happened. So the shadow government I have talked about is in place. I mean, Barack Obama has thousands of appointees who in turn have hired thousands of bureaucrats, all of whom are progressive disciples. There's a reason that 95% of all campaign contributions from the federal workforce in the Maryland and Washington, D.C. area went to the Democrats, folks. 95%. I'd say that's kind of an overwhelming percentage. So Trump is going to have his hands full, and this was just a precursor here, the canning these four people of the State Department. Trump's going to have his hands full for a while getting rid of the shadow government that Barry has set up. He'll get it done. And the faster he gets his cabinet secretaries in there, the faster it'll happen. One of the reasons that Democrats are delaying them in the Senate, I might add. Because every day the shadow government is in place, they can wreak havoc with Trump's plans. It's really that simple. And for those of you who out there in radio land who are shaking your heads, I'll tell you what. You do a little research. You do half as much research as I've done on this subject. Listen to my previous shows. You can type in shadow government. I believe it'll come up. And then you come back at me and you give me your facts. I don't mean some opinion piece from MoveOn.org. I mean your facts to dissuade me from my position, and I will absolutely put them on the next radio show or whatever radio show is subsequent to my receiving your stuff. But this is exactly what's going on. Typical stuff. All right. Oh, yeah, one other thing. I mean, Barry's like the gift that keeps on giving. So on his way out the door, you know, for 4 or 5 years, there have been all these vacancies in various board positions at the National Association of the Arts and the Endowment for Music and all these kind of cultural things, which, by the way, are really kind of propaganda departments, right? What you paint and what you do, what you sing, the lyrics of songs, all that kind of stuff sends a message. And in his last few days as president, after letting these positions sit vacant for 5 years, Barack Obama filled most of them. And you know, as just one example, as just a couple of examples, do you know who he filled them with? Well, let's see. To the NEA, the National Art, or NAE, whichever, the National Arts, Valerie Jarrett and Susan Rice are now on the board. Isn't that great? Now, personally, I think Trump, he's not going to deal with that with it at that level. He's just going to axe that stuff. We'll see if I'm right on that. Anyway, that's it for Barry. Good riddance, Barry. That was his last couple days in office. Believe it or not, that was just a week ago. Wow. Now, let's talk about the March of the Angry Vaginas, shall we? Honest to God, folks, if you... Oh, my producer's gesturing to me. Oh, yes, I did want to go over with you some of the... we're going to go over the wall stuff, because it's really pretty interesting what the Democrats are suddenly, Democrats, progressives, whatever, are suddenly saying about the wall on the border, even though they voted for it and its existing laws of 2006. And I got some interesting stats for you there. But right now, I want to talk about the March of the Angry Vaginas. So, on Saturday, the day a week ago today, the day after Trump's inauguration, there's like 500,000 gals who descend on Washington. There's 100,000 Denver and 100,000 Seattle, whatever. I mean, it was a lot of people. And if you guys did not see it, I suggest you Google it up. You had all these women running around with pink hats, many of them what they called pussy hats. This is their terminology, folks, not mine. Pussy hats. Which wrapped all the way around their face. I mean, literally, so like just their chin or their lips up to their eyes were showing. And its outer fringe was pink and furry, and its inner part around the face was like this deep red and kind of a velvet or velour or whatever. And these hats were representing vaginas. So I have... I have termed this whole deal the March of the Angry Vaginas. And you have, you know, they tried to make it sound like it was like spontaneous. It was women rising up against Trump and blah, blah, blah. It wasn't anything like that. This spontaneous groundswell, as many in the media called it, was organized and funded by George Soros. $90 million to 56 of the 403 outfits that were involved in the march. Let me tell you that there's a gal by the name of Namani, Azra Q. Namani. And she wrote an article in the New York Times. You can read the article yourself. As she said, and by the way, she's a feminist. She's a known feminist. She happened to vote for Trump. The march really isn't a women's march. It's a march for women who are anti-Trump. I think that sums it up really quite well. She's also a journalism professor and a Wall Street Journal reporter, by the way, and kind of known as, and I quote, a lifelong liberal feminist. So this is not somebody from the right at all. Quote, the funding, politics, and talking points of some of the 403 groups that are partners of the march. Soros has funded or has close relationships with at least 56 of the March's partners, including key partners such as Planned Parenthood, the National Resource Defense Council, which, by the way, is an environmental group that opposes Trump's policies, and MoveOn.org, the American Civil Liberties Union, the Center for Constitutional Rights, Amnesty International, and Human Rights Watch. By the way, there were additional outfits in the 403 folks that were funded not directly by Soros, but by through several of his organizations, which I've talked about on previous shows. His Open Society Institute, which is all about open borders and all that kind of stuff, and the Foundation to Promote Open Society. Now, here are some of the other left-wing groups that Soros funded. This will give you an idea of, A, what the composition of the Angry Vagina Marchers were, B, why they were so rabid and their speakers were so rabid, C, how they all came together in such a fluid way, you know, spontaneously, as the press would like to tell us, how they all came together in such a fluid way from, you know, 400, 500, 600 miles away from Washington, D.C. on the same time, same day. Here's a few of them. And a few I'm gonna kind of asterisk for you because it's going to tie into my next, like, mini-segment in this show. Advancement Project, American Constitution Society, make me wretch, that's an oxymoron, America's Voice, the Arab American Association of New York. Remember that, folks. The Asian Americans Advancing Justice, Center for Reproductive Rights, Color of Change, Communities United for Police Reform, DEMOS, Economic Policy Institute, Every Voice, Green for All, League of Women Voters, Make the Road New York, Empower Change, the NAACP, the Narrow Pro-Choice America Fund, the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum, the National Council of Jewish Women, the National Domestic Workers Alliance, the National Network for Arab American Communities. Remember that one, folks. The National Council of La Raza. I've talked about La Raza. Remember, La Raza wants California, New Mexico, Nevada, and part of Texas to go back to Mexico. Yeah. PEN America, the Psychologists for Social Responsibility, Public Citizen, United We Dream, and Voter Participation Center. My. Now, one of the key organizers and one of the key gals involved in this, folks, is a gal by the name of Linda Sarsour, S-A-R-S-O-U-R. She happens to be the president of the Arab American Association of New York. She planned march events. She coordinated marchers getting there. You know, the Angry Vaginas arriving to the scene of the march of the Angry Vaginas. It just so happens that in addition to being president of the Arab American Association of New York, her family is tied to Hamas and works with a terrorist front group called Council on American Islamic Relations, which is CAIR, C-I-R. Now, how many shows have I done on this? Put it in the search bar. CAIR is an arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. In other words, radical Islam. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about this. There was a gal, that, by the way, there by Ashley Judd, and she talked about she's a nasty woman because she has bloodstains on her bed. And I mean... Wow. Holy smokes. It was just unbelievable. Bill Ayers, by the way, and Bernadine Dorn were there. Who else was there? Angela Davis. Remember her? The Black Panther? She spoke at the event. Yep. By the way, she was a member of the Communist Party USA. She was expelled, by the way, by the Communist Party, and instead joined a group which is also communist and pro-Russian called Committees of Correspondence. In addition, by the way, to that comment about I'm a nasty woman because I have bloodstains on my bed, which is just unbelievable. This Judd gal, you know, Hollywood has been. She said, I feel Hitler in the streets. A mustache traded for a toupee. Nazis renamed. Oh, my God. Davis's speech, by the way, women's rights are human rights all over the planet, and that is why we say freedom and justice for Palestine. Remember the Arab connection here, folks. We celebrate the impending release of Chelsea Manning and Oscar Lopez Rivera. By the way, I didn't talk about that last week, but this was the same day that Barry released Chelsea Manning was the same day he released this Rivera guy who was a member of the FALN, a terrorist group responsible for 30 deaths and more than 130 bombings in the United States. Obama released the guy. And it was all about Puerto Rican independence. We're not going to go there right now. Who else was there? Oh, Texas-based anarchist, well-known anarchist, I might add, Lisa Fithian. Wow. She was part of the big riots at the 1999 World Trade Organization meeting in Seattle. Many of you probably, that doesn't ring a bell, but she was right there. She was also part of Occupy Wall Street and Black Lives Matter. And she's the one who organized the queer dance party. I don't know if you heard about this, but hundreds of supposedly gay and lesbian men, women, who knows what, congregated around Dan Pence's house the night before the inauguration, had a queer dance to make him uncomfortable. Who else was there? What other cool people? Oh, yeah. Thon Hartman, who, by the way, is kind of involved with Russian government RT America Network. You know, the RT America Network, which the press has accused Donald Trump of somehow being in cahoots with, because that's how the Russians got propaganda, which threw the election to him. And it's kind of tortured to follow their line of thought, but you kind of get the message. Okay, and then the Workers of the World Party, WWP, and the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, FRSO, who were also, by the way, they were kind of instrumental in the riots in the days leading up to the inauguration, the Disrupt J20 demonstrations. Both of them, the majority of their members are registered registered communists in terms of their political affiliation. The first secretary of WPPP, right, the Workers of the World Party, his name is Larry Holmes. His hero, by the way, is Kim Jong-un. And he thinks the best government on the planet is North Korea. Okay. The youth secretary for WPPP is a guy by the name of Ramiro S. Funes. He gave a speech, this is just right prior to the inauguration, that Disrupt J20 would be one of the most important political events in modern history. WPP youth leader Tom Michalak actually went to Moscow in 2014. He was a guest of Putin through the Anti-Globalization Movement of Russia group. I'm quoting him. The United States government is the greatest enemy of the peoples of the world, unquote. Another WPP guy who's also tied in with FRSO, he's an operative, you might call him, if you will, a spinmeister for WPP and FRSO. His name is Caleb Maupin, Maupin. Also, by the way, involved with RT America, you know, the Russian TV that's in the United States. Quote, U.S. society, born in racism, slavery, and the slaughter of the indigenous people, is now entering a deep political crisis. By the way, you know where he said that? He said that at the New Horizon Conference in Tehran, Iran, in 2015. Anyway, you guys got a you have a feel for who was really behind and who organized this Angry Vagina March. Now I want to bore in on Linda Sasar. Remember those names I gave you that had to do with radical Islam, had to do with Islamist propaganda, had to do with Arab American relations, which is really a cover for tentacles of care. And look, it's all subversive left wing radical Islam. I did a show. Please type it in the search bar and listen to it. The Unholy Alliance Between the Left and Radical Islam. I did it 18 months ago. And this proves it. This was a left-wing march at which radical Islamist groups were heavily represented, and one of the primary organizers is the president of the front group for radical Islamist groups in New York and has direct ties to terrorist organizations. And that is this Linda Sasar. She is a self-described Palestinian Muslim activist. That's a quote-unquote. She's a proponent of Sharia law. She's been linked to Hamas, as I talked to you about. She's a member in one way, shape, or form, including indirectly, to CARE, and absolutely hates Israel. She's an anti-Trump activist, as you can well imagine. She obviously is completely against extreme vetting of Muslim immigrants and refugees. There are pictures of her. You can Google this up, folks. There's pictures of her with Salah Sazar, who is a member of the Islamic Society of Milwaukee, a Hamas operative who was actually jailed in 1990s for terrorism-related charges in Israel. And it's rumored that they are like first cousins. So, I mean, pretty close familial relationship. There's also pictures of her with one of the financiers for Hamas, which, by the way, is designated as a terrorist organization by even the United States State Department. And I'm going to give you some of her tweets because I think this says a lot. Now, remember, folks, Sharia law. This is a march of the angry vaginas, ostensibly to preserve, in some way, shape, or form, women's rights to abortion and otherwise, and who knows what else. One of the organizers is a huge believer in Sharia law, who regards women as really subhuman, if you really want to know the truth. For instance, Sharia, I've gone over this before, but the paradox of Sharia law, of somebody organizing the March of the Angry Vaginas, who is a believer and absolutely vociferous proponent of Sharia law, which among other things, calls for genital mutilation of women, forced child marriage, women's existence as men's property, women not being allowed to be educated, to drive a car, or to work, women having to wear, I can go right down the list, you're kind of familiar with it. This is one of the prime organizers of the women wearing vagina hats marching for women's rights. You got to really think about that for a moment. You got to really think about how deluded the otherwise well-meaning women who participated in that march are, and how uninformed they are about what's really going on. They're completely manipulated by the extreme left, Soros, and by radical Islamists like Sassar, because those are the people who organize and put this march together. And it sure as hell doesn't have anything to do with whether or not you can have an abortion. Here's a couple of her tweets. I'll let her word speak for itself. She tweets, "If you are still paying interest, then Sharia law hasn't taken over America. Hashtag just saying." That was on May 12th, 2015 at 8:17 p.m. for anybody who wants to check it. Let me give you another Linda Sassar tweet. This was at 8:21 p.m., also on the 12th of May, 2015. "You'll know when you're living under Sharia law if suddenly all your loans and credit cards become interest-free. Sounds nice, doesn't it?" Anyway, do I need to say more, folks? Do you see the linkage? Yeah, you bet. You bet. The last thing I'm going to talk about, and as usual, I'm not going to get to some of the stuff I wanted to talk about, is the voter fraud thing. So, the press derisively, Trump comes out and says, "Listen, I would have won the popular vote except for illegal votes." I went over this last week. If you guys haven't, if those of you who have not listened to my last week's show, do so. I have all the stats, numbers, votes from California, New York, Illinois, illegal, the whole nine yards, and Trump would have won the popular vote by about 7 million votes. Listen to the show. It's all backed up. Now, the first thing that happens is that Trump says, "I would have won the popular vote except for illegal votes." The next thing is the press, once again, unbelievable, derisively gangs up on him saying, "Oh, you know, there he goes, he's unstable and he's wrong and it's this and it's that and this is ridiculous and blah, 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 blah." And the next thing that happens, Trump calls their bluff, kind of like when he said to the president of Mexico, "Well, if you're not paying for the wall, don't come up." Or when Putin, several weeks ago, tweeted about how he was going to upgrade all his nuclear weapons programs, and Trump said, "Well, let's have an arms race," which, of course, Putin could not compete with. So the press jumps up and down, and Trump comes out and says, "You know what? I'll tell you what. I'm going to commission a complete and in-depth investigation of voter fraud in the United States." Oh, my God. Once he called their bluff, they had a meltdown. Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, I'm talking about top Democrats, not just rank and file, top Democrats. "Well, we don't need to do that, and everybody said that there was no voter fraud, and this is ridiculous, and a waste of taxpayer." What are they scared of, folks? You know, if you go back to my show after the election, I gave you several examples of known voter fraud during the last election and gave you the sources for that information, including, by the way, the fact that Hillary Clinton, 95% sure, won the state of Nevada by voter fraud because nothing tallied, and including the fact that the Michigan recount couldn't even be done. The Democratic judge who originally ordered had to shut it down so the voter fraud wasn't completely caught and uncovered. When they found out that there were far more ballots cast for Democrats than there were total voters in certain precincts, like a third of them, 237 of 600 precincts in Detroit. I mean, the Democrats started a recount that exposed their fraud. The fraud was so bad, the recount couldn't be conducted, and the federal judge who ordered the recount had to shut it down. That's what happened. So the Democrats, suddenly wringing their hands over a study on voter fraud, remember, they've been jumping up and down about how, you know, there was fraud because Russia and the whole nine yards. Trump says, let's do a study, and they melt down. We don't need to do it. It's a waste of time and resources and money and blah, blah, blah. You know what? The best thing Donald Trump could do, and I think he will, is move it because they set it up for him. They lobbed him the softball, and he hit it out of the park, is to do a complete study on voter fraud in the United States and to mandate at the federal level that all voter registrations files of all states, municipalities, counties, you name it, be completely reviewed and purged of dead people, dogs, names living at vacant lots. I've given you examples of all this stuff. People registered in more than one place. People who come up with an illegal aliens database, whatever it happens to be, that all this be cleaned up once and for all, and that there'll be criminal penalties if jurisdictions do not keep it up to date at least every 6 months or whatever time period it's going to be, and certainly prior to 90 days, whatever, prior to any and all elections. And you know what? The reason the Democrats are freaking out is because if this study is done, then number one, their whole story about Hillary Clinton winning the popular vote will crumble. Number two, they will lose even more. There will be a whole army of deplorables, bubbas, and bitter clingers who didn't vote in the last election, even though many of us did, who will come out and vote next time. Number three, it will show them to be the lying, crooked frauds that they are. Not that they care much about that. Number four, it will cripple them in upcoming elections because that 3 to 5 million illegal votes through all sorts of different mechanisms that they have counted on that may have even elected Barack Obama in 2012, is going to be gone, putting them even further behind the eight ball that they find themselves in. So I find this very, very humorous. Now, these same people, wringing their hands when Trump called their bluff on voter fraud, are wringing their hands over Trump calling their bluff on the wall. Because they all said he'll never do it, it can't be done, blah, 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 blah. Well, guess what? There's a law in the books from 2006. It was actually on the books before then, but it was amended in 2006 and then again in 2008 that was voted for Hillary Clinton, Chuck Schumer, and Barry Obama on the 2006 vote to build 700-plus miles of wall on the southern border. And Trump's executive order very cleverly simply invokes that law and orders that law to be carried out. I mean, it's very clever. It's really very clever. So now that that bluff's been called, the Democrats and progressives, who of course really don't care about any brown-skinned people, and they don't care about refugees, they don't care about crap. They care about fundamental transformation, dilution of American values, customs, creeds, language, and systems. And they care about future votes. That's what they care about. That's all they care about. Everything else is BS. All the emotional hand-wringing is crapola. These same people are now unbelievably saying, well, you can't build the wall because it will impact the environment. Of course, what they don't say and what the Republicans, I'm sure Trump will come up with it, but what the Republicans are too friggin' stupid to say is, really? So building this wall and the road that services it, this is going to be more detrimental than several hundred thousand humans streaming across the desert, leaving trash and human waste, and then impacting through carbon emissions and all sorts of other ways, wherever they wind up in the United States every year. Really? Then the second thing that they wring their hands over is the Democrats, right? The Democrats who have spent $9 trillion. Our debt is up $9 trillion since Barry came into office. The Democrats are worried about the walls, what the wall's going to cost. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of taxpayer funds. These are the folks who have allowed 450,000 studies. Listen to my show, I think it was 2 weeks ago. 450,000 studies on how fast fish go on a treadmill. Okay? Or, you know, whether or not brown-throated warbling woodchucks smoke cigarettes. I mean, I'm making that up, but it's that ridiculous. Suddenly, they're worried about the federal budget, the expenditure of other people's money. I mean, nonsense. Now, let's say they legitimately were worried about the money. You know, here's what they forgot. They forgot that illegal immigration is because of enforcement, funds expended at the border, transportation, resettlement, recording, education, welfare, you name it. All the benefits that illegal aliens get because of Barry and crew. They're forgetting that that comes to about, and depends which expert you want to quote, somewhere between $37 and $47 billion a year. In other words, 3 to 4 times what the wall will cost, and the wall is a one-time expense. The costs related to illegal aliens are an ongoing expense. And I am way, way, way over today. I'm about an hour and 25 minutes, so you folks who have joined the podcast from the AM stations, sorry about that, but hopefully you're finding this stuff interesting. It's fascinating. And by the way, folks, the refugees and illegal alien kids, to give you an idea of how specious the Democrats' argument is over the, we can't build the wall because it's too expensive, the $15 billion or $10 billion, whatever it's going to be, doesn't matter. Here's what these same Democrats have approved and what has been spent and what is being spent under their rule and Barry's rule. Children of illegal aliens and children of refugees get food stamps, welfare cash, Social Security payments, and they receive more in taxpayer-funded aid than the children of United States citizens, folks. You can look this up under Migration Policy Institute. And you'll find pro-immigration paren /section/ immigration paren. That is your link. Check it out for yourself. 30% of refugee children live in households that receive food stamps from 2009 to 2013. In American children, the percentage is 27%. The report, by the way, which brings that to light, is called, I'm giving you guys all this stuff so you can look it up yourself, Young Children of Refugees in the United States, Integration Successes and Challenges. That's the name of the report. 8% of these kids receive cash welfare payments, compared with 6% of U.S. citizen households. 5% of the children were part of Social Security's Supplemental Security Income Program, compared with 4% of U.S. children. And the reason is that it's because they arrive poor. They arrive poor. So that's what entitles them to more than the actual citizens of their new host country. I'm not going to say their new home because most of them don't assimilate. Now, I was going to go over why Obama's CARES 20 million number is fake, but once again, I'm just out of time. So I apologize to you folks for the length of this particular podcast and broadcast. I'm sorry you AM folks literally listened to the last 30 minutes of the show on the podcast. Hopefully many of you did. And I hope that the information I've given you today is, and it's a lot of it, with all the stuff going on, I mean, it's just you can't fit it all in. I hope it's been insightful. I'll leave it at that. I know it's been frustrating to listen to and angering at the same time. But bear in mind this. Every time the angry vaginas and their very devious, very dark handlers, manipulators, and organizers, Nancy Pelosi, Barry Obama, Eric Holder, Chuck Schumer, every time they open their mouths, the end result is good for us. So try and enjoy the show. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. We'll talk to you next week, and I promise I will keep it shorter.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.